More than 30 states now have some form of voter ID laws on the books. Put it another way, more than half of our nation's population is subject to voter ID laws. This hour, we're examining new research from three political scientists on how voter ID laws impact the electorate. Hi, I'm Kate Archer-Kent, in for Kathleen Dunn. Joining us now is one of the study researchers, Zoltan Heinel. He's a political science professor at University of California, San Diego. His latest book is titled White Backlash, Immigration, Race, and American Politics. His new study is on voter identification laws and the suppression of minority votes, and it was just published in the Journal of Politics. Zoltan, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Bring us up to speed on voter ID laws across our country. What are they in place to do? How stringent are they?
Okay. So, yeah, as you briefly mentioned, some more than 30 states have some form of voter identification law in place, and they range from relatively light to quite strict. So the most severe versions, which are in place in 11 states, require you to have a form of ID in order to vote. And there's essentially little other avenue to vote other than bringing that ID into either the poll or into an office after that to use your provisional ballot. So it's and what's happening is these laws are proliferating around the country. So back all the way in 2008, not that long ago, there was essentially only one state that had a strict ID law. Today we have 11 states with some form of strict ID law in place. The argument in favor of these laws is essentially that they're there to reduce voter fraud and instill public support for democracy, public trust in our democratic system. And we can talk about whether there's reason for that and whether these laws actually solve those problems, but I'll stop for there for now.
And you gathered a lot of raw voting data from the Cooperative Congressional Election Study. Explain to us, what is this study and what did you do with all this voting data?
Okay. Yeah, and fortunately, they gathered it all for us, and we just were able to work with it. But it's a national survey done actually online with a representative sample of Americans in every state, every congressional district, and across the years that we have data from 2006 to 2014, you have almost 500,000. Votes or individuals who either voted or didn't vote in a general or primary election. So it's a huge sample of Americans. And critically, the survey goes through and validates whether each individual who said they voted actually voted or didn't vote. Because there's a lot of, if you just ask people whether they vote, a lot, you know, 30% or 20% more say they did vote than actually did vote, and that makes it harder to analyze.
And so how many Americans are in this sample?
So you have almost 500,000 votes, so about 250,000 Americans in the sample.
And what did your study see as you manipulated this data?
So, yeah, so in various different ways, we saw that states that have strict voter ID laws in place have a greater racial skew to turnout. So in states that have strict ID laws, in particular, Latino turnout tends to be lower, African-American turnout tends to be lower, and white turnout either is flat or in some cases marginally higher. So what you have with strict ID laws is a growing racial gap. So typically, whites turn out a little bit more than blacks or Latinos and other racial and ethnic minority groups. But when you have strict ID laws, those racial gaps tend to double or triple.
And you saw this more so in primaries than the general election?
Yeah, I mean, our results are definitely more, I would say, more consistent across primaries, although we do find results in general elections as well.
But these voter ID laws are relatively new onto the scene, really picking up speed over the past decade, and elections don't happen all that often. Is it too early to spot a clear trend here in the impact of these laws?
You know, I don't think so. So, you know, I think it was a few years ago. So there were a number of previous studies which had a range of different issues. But the biggest issue, I think, from most of those studies is they had only looked at strict voter ID laws in one state or one election or a couple states and elections. We have, all the elections from 2006 to 2008 where they have strict ID laws in a state. And so our number of cases is much, much higher than it has in the past. So we have, 30,000 people plus voting in strict ID states. We have 51 state elections with strict ID laws in place, which we can then compare to all the other states as well. So it is conceivable that the effect of strict ID laws will change in the future, but what we've seen so far is, I think, pretty compelling.
Here in Wisconsin in 2011, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker signed the state's voter ID bill into law. That was in May of 2011. During a press conference after the signing, Governor Walker characterized the law as common sense reform. Let's take a listen. Just one more moment here as we get this clip going. Let's take a listen.
Republicans, independents, and Democrats alike have repeatedly said that requiring a photo identification to vote was a common sense solution. It's something that we do in just about everywhere else in life. As simple as things like getting cold medicine requires a photo ID, checking out a library book in many of our public libraries, doing just about everything else in life requires that. Doesn't it make sense for something that's much more important than cold medicine or a library book, but in protecting the integrity of each and every vote cast in the state, certainly is worthy of a simple requirement that we show a photo identification as defined under this bill, which will soon be the law.
So Walker there in 2011 saying this is about voter fraud. What is it about voter fraud that is making voter ID laws gather such momentum?
We're talking a lot about voter fraud, right? So people perceive that there is a lot of fraud out there. I will say, actually, Governor Walker is correct in that these laws are relatively popular. So they are something that the majority of the public is in favor of to this point, but it's also not clear that the public has all the information. So going back to the question of fraud, we in our study didn't analyze fraud at all, but other studies have, and their findings suggest that fraud is either non-existent or so rare that it doesn't have consequences for American elections. And clearly, folks on both sides of the aisle have been studying this, and some have been, I think, wanting to find fraud and just haven't been able to find it in any way that's extensive. And so it seems like there isn't a major problem that needs to be solved by these laws. And if we look at strict voter ID in particular, there's even less of a claim to pass this kind of a law. So, for example, President Trump talked about all the undocumented immigrants who were voting in California. Again, not verified, and there seems to be very little evidence that this happens on any scale at all. But even if that were true, strict voter ID laws wouldn't address that. They are laws that will basically protect us from voter impersonation. So somebody pretending to be somebody else who is in fact a registered voter. So going into the polls and someone else claims to be Zoli Heidel and they use my ballot and vote on that. And we have even less data indicating that exists as a problem out there. So it's a even more rare problem, even less of an issue that needs to be solved by these voter impersonation, these strict voter ID laws.
We're talking with Dr. Zoltan Heinel. He's a professor of political science at the University of California, San Diego. He and a couple other researchers are out with a new study in the Journal of Politics that crunched the data from these states that have voter ID laws and found that there is minority suppression in votes. And Dr. Heinel, what if there is this suppression in minority voting and going to polls and primaries and general elections, what does that say about the outcomes in skewing toward the Republican Party?
So we also looked at partisan bias or partisan skew in our analysis. And as you would expect, you see similar patterns, a little less clear and not as consistent across general and primary elections. But the sort of the net or the general effect of having strict ID laws in place is to amplify the voice or the votes of Republicans and conservatives and to reduce the influence of Democrats and liberals. The next question is whether that's enough to actually have affected an election, and that's not something that we've looked at yet in our analysis. But it does appear that putting strict ID laws in place very much advantages Republicans and disadvantages Democrats. And that, coupled with the fact that these laws are being passed by Republicans, suggests that Republicans are trying to skew Democratic outcomes in their favor.
Do we know how it might be difficult to get a state-issued identification card for Americans who are minorities?
And again, that's not something that we looked at directly, but others are looking at. And, you know, that varies. It is, if you're living in a rural area and you don't have a vehicle, then it's even harder. And in some states, it's costly. Other states, it's free, but there are very few offices. So there is a cost to it. And in all fairness, it's often not a massive cost. But we, as citizens, unfortunately, any cost that is added to us put in front of us voting tends to reduce our participation. So we see in all kinds of different ways that any sort of small change in how much work we have to do to vote greatly affects whether we do vote or not in the end.
We're talking right now with political scientist Zoltan Heinel of the University of California, San Diego. He worked with two other researchers on a new study that documents voter suppression through voter ID laws that have become increasingly popular across the country. The new study is published in the Journal of Politics, and we have a link on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. And you can join in this discussion about voter ID laws at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about Zoltan's research? Have you been impacted by a voter ID law? Tell us your story. Join in the discussion at 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll be back after a short break here on the Ideas Network. We're picking up our conversation now with Zoltan Heinel. He's a political science professor at UC San Diego. Zoltan, along with two colleagues, have a new study published in the Journal of Politics. They've crunched the numbers on how voter ID laws can influence elections in primaries and a general election. Are these voter ID laws barriers for minority voters, or are they a control mechanism for the possibility of fraud in elections? Do you worry about voter fraud in elections? Add your thoughts at 800-642-1234 or post on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. Let's now go to a caller, Brenda in Nina. Hi, Brenda.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Okay, I just have a couple of questions and a comment. I, first of all, do not believe that there is enough voter ID theft or fraud to impact elections. That being said, I have an ID. To me, it's not a big deal. But then, of course, I am, if you want to say, white. But my question is, you refer to studies regarding the voter IDs, the voting results. I'm sorry, I'm driving down the road. I just want to make sure I get my question in.
Sure.
Did you compare the voter election turnout prior to the voter ID laws?
Sure, I can take that one. So we did a series of different tests. Yeah, we looked at just comparing states that have strict ID laws to states that don't, so just at one point in time. And then we did other tests where we looked at changes in turnout in states that are enacting strict ID laws for the first time. And you see a similar sort of pattern whether you look across states or in the same state across time. So, for example, in the three states that switched to strict voter ID laws in 2014, we saw that the gap between white turnout and either black or Latino turnout increased more in these strict ID states than it these new strict ID states than it did in other states over the same time period. So it does appear that just looking that there is a shift in some of these states. One other piece of evidence that's not in the in the study that we did, but data that we've been collecting more recently, looking actually at Wisconsin and its experience with strict voter ID laws in 2016, we looked at changes in turnout at the county level across counties in Wisconsin from 2012 to 2016, and we found that counties that were more heavily black or heavily more heavily non-white, their turnout in Wisconsin decreased more rapidly than turnout in more white counties, and the declines in black turnout the declines in turnout in heavily black counties was greater in Wisconsin than in other states that didn't switch or didn't have strict ID laws. So it seems to be a dynamic process and one that's also occurring in Wisconsin.
Yeah, so your results in Wisconsin bear out across other states with voter ID laws.
Right, and you know that I would say that that's not published, that's preliminary, but it seems so far to be matching the same patterns.
Brenda, thanks for your call. Let's now go to Clyde in Cedarburg. Hi, Clyde.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call, and thank you for the program. I think voter suppression is a very important question to be addressing. And my comment is that although required voter ID requirements certainly have an impact on suppressing voter turnout, and they have not been shown to address any problem of fraud. They have not been able to fix or prevent virtually any voter fraud. The thing that seems to me to be more significant is the proof of residence, even more significant than the photo ID, is the proof of residence requirements. And I say that from my experience as an election protection observer, where in the particular polling place that I was at in Wisconsin that I observed at, I was able to watch everyone who came to vote, to try to vote. And I also was able to inquire about and find or observe why those people that were prevented from voting were prevented. And the reason in every case was proof of residence. It was not lack of photo ID. Now, photo ID certainly turned people or discouraged people from trying to vote, but this proof of residence is a much more insidious kind of problem that keeps causing problems if you've moved recently and so forth, the various things that proof of residence problems are causing. The thing that happened that's real interesting about the proof of residence is that when I look carefully at the proof of residence documents that are required, at least in Wisconsin, none of them actually prove that anyone actually lives anywhere. They just disadvantage some certain people and certain demographic groups of people from being able to vote without having to produce those documents, and those documents can be difficult for some people to get and absurdly easy for others to get. For example, a real estate developer absentee landlord can easily get a hold of lots of proofs of residence that actually don't prove that he lives there. But,
and I'm going to jump in here. Zoltan, how would you respond to that?
Well, so I think the comment is generally accurate. So there is, our study is on strict voter ID laws, but there are a host of smaller and larger barriers to participation in American democracy, right? So you another is proof of citizenship. Anything that makes it harder to vote is going to reduce the number of people participating. So and there are occasionally legitimate reasons to try and have documentation, but I think at the heart a lot of it comes down to, are we interested in trying to get full participation by a broad spectrum of Americans, or are we going to try to limit it to those more with means, with the gumption and the ability to overcome these hurdles in order to participate? And that's sort of the core fundamental question is, do we want broad, even participation, or do we want to limit participation to some select proportion of the population?
Clyde, thanks for your call. Let's now go to Joan in Milwaukee. Hi, Joan.
Hi. Just one comment, actually, and that is a fear of the changing demographics to becoming more brown than white. And another way of putting it is white privilege is a great big thing. And a lot of people don't even understand or believe that there is such a thing as white privilege. We've been brainwashed for a long time.
And Zoltan, is there an undercurrent in your study results that are giving us perhaps insight to where these voter ID laws are coming from and their intended impact?
Yeah, and the answer in our studies is no, but there are a number of other studies looking at, you know, where these laws are being passed. And as I briefly mentioned before, they are being passed by Republican legislatures in Republican-dominated states. And even more than that, they're being passed in states, especially Republican states, where there are larger racial and ethnic minority populations. And so that does get a little bit at the potential fear of demographic change. And so it could be argued that these laws are trying to prevent a shift from, if you want to call it white privilege or white majority or white control, to one where there's more influence across a broader array of Americans of every race and ethnicity. It is, having said that, hard to know what's going on in the minds of the individual legislators who are passing these laws. They are not certainly saying in most cases that this is racially motivated. They're, again, going back to, this is designed to reduce fraud, instill trust in American democracy, and so we don't, it's hard to know what their motivations are in this particular case. I will say that there are historical analogies that do make you sort of wonder, right? So strict voter ID laws are the first law that we have in place in American politics that has a differential racial effect that is on the face of it non-racial but has this racial effect. So if we go way back, we can look at poll taxes, we can look at the literacy test, both ostensibly not about race, race neutral, but both clearly very discriminatory with very negative effects for racial and ethnic minorities, and in light of what we now know about them, things that we definitely don't want in our democracy. And so I'm not equating strict voter ID laws with those two other, the literacy test and poll taxes, but there is a parallel there that might raise concerns.
Zoltan, there's been a lot of pushback on these voter ID laws in the courts. How have the courts handled these cases and ruled on these cases generally across the country?
So my non-legal analysis of this is that it's a mess, that the courts have not been particularly consistent on this, and so it depends which court you're in.
Mm-hmm.
I think reading a little deeper, the courts seem to be saying we want to decide this based on a balance between ensuring that democracy is that there is integrity to American democracy. So that concern on one side, and then the concern for the racial effects on the other. And so it's come down, I think, to a large extent to what's the evidence in favor of fraud being a big issue. What's the evidence in that suggests that these laws will undo that fraud? And then on the other side, what's the evidence that these laws do have an undue burden on racial and ethnic minorities, and that they do limit minority turnout? So those are, you know, actively being studied by social scientists, and actively being debated by lawyers, and then actively being evaluated by judges. But I don't think there's a clear consensus as to whether these laws are constitutional or not, or it doesn't seem like there is one at this time.
We're talking with University of California, San Diego political scientist Zoltan Hajnal about new study out in the journal Politics that he authored along with his other two colleagues that uses voting data to explore how voter ID laws may skew elections. 11 states now have a strict voter ID requirement. Let's take another call now at 800-642-1234, Alan in Madison. Hi, Alan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, and thank you so much for having this topic on the radio. I think this is really important. And I want to say, and I understand that when someone is doing, an academic study of this, has to be very, very painstaking. And I really want to say, I want to be a cheerleader and say, yay, go, 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 because we need more of this to connect the dots. But I'm going to go ahead and connect the dots right now. I'm going to say that it's not hard to know what's in the mind of these politicians, because you look at the face of the evidence, you look at it and you see there's no voter fraud, virtually, statistically, no voter fraud. And yet that's what the Republicans are saying is the reason why they're doing this. Now stop and think about that. Republicans tend to be people who are very fiscally conservative. They don't want to spend money really on anything if they can help it. And yet they're throwing money at this idea, which seems to have no basis in reality. So then you have to say, well, what else is going on? And then you look at these studies that are coming out, like what we're talking about today, and you see, well, wait a minute. Actually, this is having an impact on poor and people of color being able to get to the polls. And so, therefore, I'm going to say this, and this is my question, I guess, and this may not be your guest's expertise here, but at least maybe he would have an idea because he's been dealing with this. He just got done saying that the courts are sort of a mess. What would be the best approach in the courts? What would be the best case scenario that he could maybe think of, or that maybe the listening audience could think of, to take to the courts to say, look, let's get to the bottom of this, let's be real, and let's fix this problem, because we're dealing with a problem that doesn't exist. We're dealing with basically being racist with our law.
Okay. And I'll tackle that, or I'll try to tackle that a little bit. And yeah, this is not, I am not a legal expert, but I think the courts are, at least to a certain extent, asking for data, right? So the more that we have good studies analyzing the extent to which there is voter fraud out there, the more that we have studies analyzing, in particular, the extent to which we have voter impersonation fraud out there, that will sort of inform the courts as to whether or not there is a problem that needs to be solved. So the more that studies have shown that there isn't really a problem, that then the motivation for these laws is reduced, the reason for these laws is reduced. And then on the other side, you know, there are some very good studies sort of looking at who has which IDs where, how hard is it for those who don't have IDs in order to get them, and then our work looking at, you know, what are the consequences at the end of the day for racial and ethnic minority turnout. So I don't know if the data will be compelling or not, but it does seem to be should be highly relevant to those decisions, I would think.
Alan, thank you so much for your call. Zoltan, we have a new Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. How might his appointment influence voter ID laws in the political shift there as Attorney General and voting rights?
Sure. I mean, yeah. So his record on voting rights is fairly clear. I mean, he did vote to extend the Voting Rights Act. So there is some variation there, but for the most part, I think his record suggests that he has not been particularly supportive of expansive voting rights and an expansive Voting Rights Act and a powerful Voting Rights Act. And in particular, the fact that the Department of Justice seems to be not as supportive of a suit against strict voter ID laws in Texas suggests, I think, fairly clearly that there will be less support by the Department of Justice for cases against strict voter ID laws, and then potentially even active support for the implementation of strict voter ID laws. So, you know, extrapolating a little bit from that, it seems like there's a real chance that these laws will proliferate even further.
Let's take another call now. Eric in Fitchburg. Hi, Eric.
Hi there.
What would you like to add? Yeah.
I'm just wondering if the left is focusing too much on voter ID laws and less on gerrymandering. I feel like that has something that impacts our elections greatly, especially in Wisconsin. And I'm just wondering what the guest thoughts are on gerrymandering versus voter ID laws. It seems like we make way more of a fuss of voter ID laws, and I don't hear as much about the gerrymandering issue. So I'll take my comments off here.
Zoltan, does gerrymandering intersect with your research?
It doesn't, but you know, it's certainly an area of active research by others, and something that I think, probably doesn't get as much attention right now, but is important, and I think can have widespread consequences for electoral outcomes. So I wouldn't say we should only focus on strict voter ID laws. I think we should have a broader conversation for sure.
We're talking with University of California at San Diego political scientist Zoltan Heinel about a new study out in the journal Politics. Zoltan and his colleagues used validated voting data from the Cooperative Congressional Election Study to explore how voter ID laws skew elections. 11 states now have a strict voter ID requirement. In 2013, lawmakers in 6 states moved to strengthen their voter ID laws. Are voter ID laws fair? You can join in the discussion at 800-642-1234. Are these laws serving their intended purpose? Add your voice at 800-642-1234 or post on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. We'll be back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. First, we're picking up our conversation with Zoltan Heinel. He's a political scientist at UC San Diego studying racial and ethnic politics, immigration, and voter behavior. He's one of 3 researchers out with a new study in the journal Politics that looked closely on the impact of voter ID laws and their impact on minority populations. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think these laws limit the access and participation in of our country's most disadvantaged? Join in your comments at 800-642-1234. Let's now go to Milan in Menominee Falls. Hi, Milan.
Good afternoon, and thank you for this wonderful study you are reporting. I'm an older individual, I would say in my 60s, but I have a background in political science, undergraduate and graduate, as well as law. And when I was studying, the concern of voter fraud, particularly in the machine cities, Chicago, Albany, Kansas City, New Orleans, Providence, was very considered very likely. And I note still, even in Wisconsin now, we still have both voter judges at the voting scene as well as party checkers that make sure things are not going on. And my question is, and just in general, has voter fraud disappeared in the United States to such a degree that it should not be a concern at all? I mean, and what point did this occur at? And I guess the second one is, we have a concern with impersonation now on the internet and in other ways. Is that influencing its way into the into the ID situation. I voted, I'm a U.S. citizen. I have voted in many states. I've moved around quite a bit. And quite frankly, until I moved into Wisconsin, that was the first state I ever moved into that I was not asked for an ID at the polls. Thank you.
Sure. I mean, I think the short answer is there does not appear to be widespread fraud in American elections today, right? So we did have the talk of the old machine cities and stuffing the ballot and vote early and vote often. Now that you have a whole series of checks and balances and you have poll watchers from both parties, we just aren't seeing a lot of that, the evidence of that fraud out there. So it doesn't seem to be a major problem.
Well, Milan, thank you so much for your call. We have an email from Paul who asks, will future research look at specific barriers to getting a voter ID? Things like very limited Saturday DMV hours, difficulty in obtaining birth certificates, and so on.
Yes, and that research is ongoing, especially I think in some of the states that where litigation is occurring and we're sort of getting a sense of how hard it is and seeing that these effects are not even. So it seems like, going back to that county-level data that I was talking about, that turnout, when you implement strict ID laws, turnout among minorities drops, especially in more rural counties where it is harder to access government offices. It takes longer, fewer hours or fewer locations. So that is, I think, a next line of research, and it's at least so far suggesting that these laws can have particularly large effects in certain locations.
Let's now go to Scott in Merrill. Hi, Scott.
Hi. My question is, did your research turn up any correlation between the 11 states that have strict voter ID laws and the presence or the drafting of these laws through ALEC?
I didn't look at that at all. You know, there is, again, some interesting research looking at how these sort of model bills are being distributed, and ALEC seems to be having a large effect on that. But I don't know of that in this particular case, unfortunately.
And explain what ALEC is.
So it's a either a think tank or a lobby group, depending on one's perspective, that is proposing legislation and then distributing that model legislation to state legislators mm-hmm. around the country. And what we're other studies have found is that those exact model, the exact phrases and model legislation is being repeated and proliferated from one state to the other.
Well, thank you so much, Scott, for your call. Let's go to Emily now in Green Bay. Hi, Emily.
Hello. I would like to ask your guest how he thinks the voter ID laws would favor the Republicans, or has it been proven that these voter ID laws favor Republicans?
Yeah, sure. And I think that, so that is part of our study, and we are finding political or partisan effects, again, not as consistent as we are the racial effects, but it makes sense, right? So if racial and ethnic minorities who overwhelmingly favor the Democratic Party are, their turnout is differentially hurt by strict voter ID laws, then you're losing a lot of Democratic votes, and you're not losing as many or any Republican votes, and so you're going to see a more robust voice or vote on the Republican side and a weaker vote on the Democratic side. And so there is, it appears to be a pretty clear political consequence to this. The question still, I think, outstanding is whether these laws have actually reversed electoral outcomes. And on that, we don't have answers, I think, quite yet.
Are you looking for those types of answers?
Yeah, it's a more complicated question, right? Mm. So how would the people who didn't vote have actually voted? And I'm not sure we'll have a answer quickly, I guess is the way I would put it.
Yeah. Emily, thanks so much for your call. Let's now go to Tom in Escanaba, Michigan. Hi, Tom. Yeah, can you hear us? That sounds pretty sketchy there. Tom must be on the road. Let's switch now to Joan in Eau Claire. Hi, Joan.
Good afternoon. A voter ID is voter suppression, pure and simple. A larger voter turnout favors the Democrats, and Walker and the other Republicans know this, and that's the reason for ramming through this voter ID legislation. These Republican governors are bought and paid for by their very wealthy political donors, and they are doing their bidding. On a side note, voting is a right. Gaining admittance to an airliner is not a right. Obtaining a library card is not a right. And thank you for allowing me to speak.
Well, Joan, thank you so much for your comment. Zoltan, you talked earlier about Wisconsin-specific data that is not published right now. Do you know when your results on looking at Wisconsin specifically will come out and where?
No, I don't. And it will. I do know it'll take a long time. The wheels of academia move very, very slowly. So we're doing the analysis now, and we'll have to submit, and it'll go up for review. And it, so we're probably talking a couple years before that reaches the light of official day, in any case.
Mm. What does the future look like, in your expert opinion? Do you expect to see even more strict laws in more states throughout the nation, or will the pendulum swing back the other way?
You know, I think two patterns would be my guess. One is I do think we will have more states with strict ID laws, or at least more states attempting to pass them. We're already seeing that, so there are lots of strict ID laws in process in one form or another in different states. But I think it'll also become, the second pattern is it may become a more partisan, even more partisan than it is, and so states that have maybe weaker forms of ID laws that are Democratic will might choose to drop even those weaker forms. So you'll have a polarization potentially of states, Republican states, maybe all or most with the strictest forms, and then Democratic states with little or no restrictions.
We're talking right now with Zoltan Hajnal, who is a political science professor at the University of California, San Diego, talking about his new study on voter ID laws and the suppression of minority voters, just published in the Journal of Politics. Let's take another caller now, Mike in Greenbush. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I go back to the Kennedy era, so I know a little bit about the political landscape shifting, and the point in 1996, I think, when Newt Gingrich basically announced that he wanted a permanent majority, you have to understand the euphemisms. Whoever comes up with the terms generally wins the debates, such as collateral damage, which basically is a euphemism for civilians. But voter ID law is nothing more than a Jim Crow laws, and we have to call it Jim Crow because when you legitimize it by calling it a voter ID law and you do research on it, you're legitimizing the fact that it's a brilliantly diabolical scheme to have a one-party system, and that's anti-democratic. So we have to be honest about what the terms are. Jim Crow laws are being initiated by what I consider to be Confederates, and essentially it may sound controversial, but you got to call it what it is. It's Jim Crow.
And Mike, thanks for your call. We've been hearing from a lot of callers who are certainly against voter ID laws. Zoltan, are there other arguments for instituting voter ID laws that don't center on voter fraud?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's an argument that, one, it's Democratic in the sense of most Americans, at least in polls that until recently, or until the most recent polls, were very much in favor of strict or voter ID laws. And, you know, based on the argument that I need an ID for all kinds of other things, so we should have an ID for this important part of our democratic process. So you can make a democratic argument for them. You can also make an argument that even if there isn't a problem per se with voter fraud, if this leads individual Americans to feel greater trust in the system, to feel more confident about the results in the system, that strengthens our democracy as well. So it could have these attitudinal effects among some small or large segment of the American public. So those are two other reasons that have been put forward for these laws.
Let's take another call now. Mark in Ironwood, Michigan. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I'm wondering why I have never heard one person that is unable to vote because of registration. I'm this voter ID, whether it be one side or the other. Why do we not hear from a person, the person, who cannot get registered? And the other thing, as he said, as far as false voting, I mean, he said too much. If somebody charges you $2 too much for your hamburger, that's too much. So, I mean, there's not a, you know, what is the level of too much? But what does Australia do? Because it is the law. You have to vote. So you have to be registered as a citizen. So I'm just curious why we haven't heard. I'd like to hear from people who cannot get registered.
And let's unpack that, Zoltan, a little bit. And looking around the world, mentioning Australia there and demanding that people vote.
Sure. I mean, our system, comparatively speaking, is a strict system where we have more hoops and hurdles in order to vote than most other nations out there. So you do have to have registration. There isn't typically automatic registration. And then there are, as we've talked about with strict voter ID laws, some barriers to actually participating. Excuse me. I have a little bit of a cold here.
That's okay.
As a result, our overall turnout in American politics is relatively low compared to other countries, and it does seem like it's more skewed than other countries. So we less well-off, more disadvantaged, racial and ethnic minorities, much less apt to turn out in American politics, and then maybe less so in several other countries. And, you know, I'm not sure we've made a conscious decision to move in that direction or not, and we might think about something like a universal voting or mandatory voting as an option, right? So that would require that anybody who's eligible would have to participate, and you could have some small fine. And many might view that as undemocratic, and many might view that as extraordinarily democratic because we would, as Australia does, get almost everybody to the polls, and we would hear from basically the entire electorate and get their preferences, and those broader preferences would determine outcomes. So there are merits to thinking about larger changes, although I'm not sure America is ready for universal voting right now.
Will we see turnout disparities in states where there are no strict voter ID laws? And what kinds of things can states do to close the gap?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we see disparities all over the place. So in every state, typically, you know, one of the biggest factors is socioeconomic status. So those well-off Americans are participate at great, at high rates. Poor, less well-educated Americans participate much less often. There are all kinds of different ways in which we could change that. One other thing that I'm working on that I think has potential, especially because it's a little less partisan of an issue and has a range of other benefits, but I'll walk through it briefly, which is in Wisconsin and in most other states, most of our local elections are held in what we call off-cycle. So they're on some random Tuesday or Wednesday in some random month, often in an odd year. And in those off-cycle elections, basically very few of us participate. So you might get 10% of the adult participation.
And we have about less than a minute left. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll really quickly say, so if we were to switch all of our local elections to the same day as presidential elections, we would double or triple local turnout and have a more representative, with no cost, no extra additional financial cost, have a much more representative electorate in our local elections. And it's something that actually Americans favor in that they only have to go to the polls once.
Zoltan, thanks for sharing your research with us.
Thank you very much.
Zoltan Hynell is a political science professor at the University of California, San Diego. His most recent book is titled White Backlash, Immigration, Race, and American Politics. His new study on voter ID laws is out in the Journal of Politics. Thanks to producer Scotty Myers for this show. We had on-air production help today from Chris Molina with technical direction from Dave Potras. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, in for a vacationing Kathleen Dunn, and you're hearing us on the Ideas Network.